Smith
back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up.
Deep ball down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, Anita Marks and Paul Dottino.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. As the gentleman said, Anita Marks, Paul Dottino, and as always, you.
It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live.
And we welcome you. 201-939-4513 is the phone number. Come on, we know. You already have it locked and loaded in your cell phone. With you for the next hour or so. And taking calls, and of course, as the Giants get ready to take on the Seattle Seahawks, I had the pleasure of hosting a show yesterday with Brandon Myers. I want to share that with you guys today as well. If you did miss the interview, the show, you can log on to Giants.com and watch it. He was very good, and I think shared some interesting things. Also, you know, we're at that point right now, Paul, where we really need to start looking forward. We know the Giants, the last day here for us is, what, the 30th? That's Black Baggy Day. So we need to really start looking forward to what is this organization going to do in the off season? Who are they going to focus on in the draft? What free agents are out there that, of course, if the cap cooperates, the Giants could realistically pursue? And these are some topics that we're going to discuss within the next few weeks before the season ends. Also, look, I'm a fantasy football freak. So if you have any fantasy football questions, if you're one of the very lucky, like myself, who has advanced to the second round of the playoffs, because typically, I know you're not really familiar with this, Paul, but week 15 is typically the second round of the playoffs for fantasy football folks out there. Week 16 is the championship. So I'm going to open up the phone lines as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be all Giants topics. If you have any fantasy football questions, by all means, please call in. I'd love to help you. I am going to pat myself on the back and say that I've made it out of the 12 leagues I play in. I've made it to the second round in the playoffs in 10 of the 12. Thank you very much, Josh Gordon. Thank you very much, Alshon Jeffrey. And thank you very much, Josh McCown, from that beating.
10 out of 12.
10 out of 12.
See, my record's perfect. 0-0.
Because and you need to play, Paul. For someone who loves football and loves analytics and loves all the research you do, you would be a beast. You would be an absolute beast at it. I'm just saying. You really need to get on it. What else? What happens today? What's the schedule for today? We're with you till 11:30, and then the players go to practice. After practice, head coach Tom Coughlin, the players are made available to the media. Those interviews will be up on Giants.com. I actually had an opportunity to talk to Hakeem Nicks yesterday. And that was interesting. I will share that with you a little bit later on in the show as well. And then we have our Big Blue Hits live show at 4 o'clock. Myself, Paul Dottino, and Roman Oben. Those phone lines are open. You can get on the show as well at 201-939-4513. So that's our schedule for this afternoon here at the facility while we stay inside and stay warm, because it's absolutely freezing outside.
You know, Anita, yesterday when we were talking here at the complex, you had said to me, wow, weather really played havoc on a lot of those games the other day. And, you know, in a fantasy world, especially when you're talking about your kickers, that is a major factor. And now I'm hearing on the weekend they're talking about the Northeast getting plastered by another 3 to 5 inches of some type of storm. And so...
Yeah, but how interesting is this? Because I learned my lesson. Last week, and this is a really knock on me, because this is what I do for a living, I should have been more aware of the weather conditions. I started Justin Tucker. For folks out there who started David Akers, I mean, in those weather conditions, those kickers are not kicking field goals. You saw the Detroit Lions go for 2. So, yes, you really need to be very aware of the weather conditions in and around. But how about this? a lot of the games that are being played in the North are inside. Like, Detroit's at home this week.
Okay.
You know, so in looking at a lot of the Northeast teams, they are either on the road in warm weather places or they are indoors. And the only game that's outside that's going to have to deal with bad weather conditions might be the Giants.
Okay.
With the Seattle Seahawks coming to town.
From a kicker's perspective, Hauschka is the leading kicker in the NFL this year. He's probably going to be going to the Pro Bowl. In fact, he's only missed one field goal all season. It was blocked. That's how good he is. And he's also got 50-plus yard range. It ought to be interesting to see if he's able to deal with those kinds of conditions at MetLife Stadium. Although, quite frankly, Seattle's conditions are not exactly great either. It's cold and it's windy out in the Northwest. So I'm sure he's not going to be shocked if it's nasty here in East Rutherford. But anyway, I just brought that up because we were talking about it yesterday.
Well, I mean, and this is pretty interesting. Again, I know that you're really not very knowledgeable about fantasy football and the way that everything operates.
I've learned something from you.
But believe it or not, Paul, there are, you know, to go on, you could go on and you can find the stats in regard to the teams that are giving up the most fantasy football points to kickers. So the last 4 weeks, believe it or not, the Tennessee Titans, they're averaging 15 fantasy football points to opposing kickers. So what does that mean? It means that this is a team that's really good in the red zone, right?
Okay, because they're forced to use the kicker too much. The opponent is.
Also,
I got you.
Okay. Also, the Tennessee Titans, they're very good against the pass. So, you know, the Jets giving up an average of 12 fantasy football points to kickers, the Oakland Raiders, the Cleveland Browns, and the Pittsburgh Steelers. So going into this week's matchups, you want your field goal kickers from Cincinnati, Chicago, Kansas City, Carolina, and Arizona.
That's cool how you did that.
So those are your better matchups in regard to kickers that are going to put up more points for you, because typically these are the teams that are really good in the red zone and are limiting touchdowns and allowing teams to score, get into field goal position, and giving up field goals.
Folks, you have just seen a genius at work.
No, stop it.
I have tremendous respect for what you do.
Okay. Let's continue with the show. I know there's a lot of folks out there who do want to talk about the Giants, especially Eric Kennedy, owner of Big Blue Interactive, one of the best Giants fan sites out there. Eric, as always, joins us every Thursday. Eric, first and foremost, are you in fantasy? Do you play fantasy? I think I asked you this before and you said no, right? You don't like
it? No, I actually brought it up before that I can't stand fantasy football because Giants fans ending up rooting for Dallas's quarterback to do well and that type of thing. So no, it's not for me. It's not my cup of tea.
But
I understand how popular it is.
Yeah, let me piggyback off of that for just a second though, because Eric, we are in a very unique situation with the Giants with three, I hate to use that word, meaningless games coming up. I mean, is that what it's come down to though for the fans on your board, that hey, they just are rooting for certain players, guys they like, guys they want to see, and it's almost like the wins and losses are not relevant to the fans at this point? Or do you find that they're still living and dying with each result?
Oh, I don't think it's the former. I think they're not rooting necessarily for specific players. I think there's an interest to see certain players that haven't played play a little bit more to see if there's any talent there. I think wins and losses still matter. What is interesting is you do have an aspect of the fan base that are saying, hey, it might not be such a great thing if we win many more of these games in terms of the draft position. But I think, you know, come game day, those competitive juices tend to flow with fans. And if win or lose, people are going to either be happier or sad depending on the outcome of the game. I think what's always been, and the site's been around since 95, so it's been, you know, we're coming up almost on our 20th year, and I always find it interesting that after a loss, we see much more traffic than we do after a win, and I think it's because fans like to come on and sort of commiserate with each other, and, you know, and it's a cathartic experience to sort of vent what's going on. So there's been a lot of venting in this year, as you can imagine.
Yeah, well, Eric, I got to tell you, this Seattle Seahawks team is really, really good, and it's hard to find ways that the Giants are going to be able to pull off this upset. Seattle really is the total package. Very, very few dents on the body here. And so I'm curious as to the tenor of the fan base right now. Are they going into the Seattle game thinking the Giants can pull off this upset, or are they thinking that it's a Sunday of doom? I mean, what are you sensing?
They're not even talking about the game, to be honest with you, because I think it's a foregone conclusion to most fans. I will say this. It is a scary matchup. I agree with you, because the Giants, they've struggled throwing the football, as you know, all season. But they've had trouble throwing against some of the worst defenses, pass defenses, in the NFL this year. So now they're going up against the number one pass defense, and that's pretty scary. But to answer your question, the fans, there really hasn't been that much discussion about the Seahawks game. Most of the discussion this week has been about what do we need to do to fix this problem and move forward in the 2014. So it may be for the first time in recent memory that I can remember that an upcoming game really isn't even being discussed all that much.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, typically I get at least, I don't know, 4 to 6 ticket requests to go to the Giants games, and I haven't received one at all, and we're already on Thursday, so it's going to be interesting. Now, I will share this with you, Eric. As I said when I opened up the show, I had an opportunity to do an interview with Akeem Nix yesterday, and then Brandon Myers was my special guest for Big Blue Hits Live. And both of them kind of communicated what we heard head coach Tom Coughlin communicate earlier on in the day when he met with the media, and that is there is this heightened level, there is this sense of excitement that the fact that they are going up against the Seattle Seahawks team, which many feels the best team in the NFL, and there is a pride factor that exists here in this locker room right now, that these guys feel like, all right, listen, we're really not playing for a spot in the postseason, but we have a chance to make a statement here. We have an opportunity to be a spoiler. We have an opportunity to beat the best team in the NFL here at home. And so I'm sensing that. I mean, Paul, you were in the locker room yesterday as well. You spoke to a number of the guys. Did you sense that? Did you get a feel for that at all?
I got the same stuff out of Antrell Roll, Justin Tuck. John Beeson flat out said this would be the signature game of the season.
Exactly.
If they upset Seattle at home, knowing that they are the best team in the NFL. Eric, I don't know. Would the fans take any consolation? I don't think so. If the Giants beat Seattle, does that mean anything to the fan base?
Well, I think Victor Cruz said it best earlier in the week. If they end up beating Seattle, it'd almost be a bad thing in the sense that, you know, it would be another kick in the pants there in terms of, you know, what could have been type, you know, in terms of the team beat Seattle. The problem is Seattle's coming off a loss, as you know, so they're already going to be a bit angry coming into this game. But that being said, there's been a history with the Giants and other teams, too, in such situations where everyone's convinced that the team's going to get killed and then the upset happens. So I wouldn't put it past them to play a competitive game here. I would be a little bit more confident if Seattle had beaten San Francisco. But the Giants have had a history in recent years of when they've been in these types of situations, which hasn't been often, but when they've you know, people have challenged their pride and challenged their manhood in recent games in the last few years. Sometimes we've been disappointed with the outcomes. The problem, what's upsetting the fans, I think, a lot this year is not just the fact that they're losing, but in the last 2 years we've seen some blowout losses. And I think the fact that they're not competitive in certain games this year and last year, especially towards the end of last year, when you talk about the Bengals game, the Ravens game, last year, and then of course this year you had the Panthers game and last week. I think that's what's upsetting the fans, because they're not even being competitive on the field in some of these games. And mm-hmm. So the curiosity, I think, this Sunday is, or the fear this Sunday is this going to be another, you know, 30-7 type game, or are they at least going to make it close? And I think the other thing too that plays into this with the discussion with fans is, what is going on with some of the so-called elite talent on this team? We've talked about in past shows about Eli being a problem, but I've harped on this week is that, you know, Hakeem Nicks hasn't scored at all this year. Victor Cruz hasn't scored a touchdown since week 4.
Yep.
Reuben Randle, who they put so much, you know, we heard so much about coming out of training camp and we thought was poised for a breakout year, he hasn't had more than 3 catches in a game since week 5. So the big three on offense, it's not just Eli, the wide receivers, and obviously they're intimately connected, But the people that he's throwing to aren't making plays as well, too. So we can talk about the offensive line, and obviously Eli's not getting a lot of protection. It's starting to settle down a little bit, I thought, last week, at least against San Diego. But the big players, the money players on this team, aren't making plays, and that's where a lot of the focus has been, too.
Well, Eric, the only thing I can say to you is Justin Tuck told us yesterday, when someone said to him, you know, what kind of motivation do you need to get through these three games? And he said, hey, I got a paycheck today. There's a bunch of other guys in this room who got a paycheck today. We got to go out and we got to earn that paycheck. We got a job to do. Now, it's easy to say, and some guys will do it. Some guys probably won't. That's my experience from being around this league for a long time. But I will say this, Eric. The front office is watching very carefully. So is this coaching staff. And I think you can probably make a pretty good bet that the guys who don't show up over the next few weeks will not be here.
Oh, I agree with that completely. The only problem with that argument is we've seen games in recent years where you could make that same argument that guys didn't show up on game day, again, three times last year, twice this year already. And, again, you know, you could. The words are great, but the front office is going to have to act here. I mean, there are a lot of people on this team that are making a lot of money right now.
Yeah, but
and
Eric,
are,
one
are
thing,
not performing.
One thing you got to remember: we're close to the end of the regular season, and the Giants have over two dozen unrestricted free agents.
That's
so
true.
You're talking about a plethora of guys who are literally walking on a tightrope right now. I can't remember the last time the Giants had that many UFAs at the end of the season. So you really have guys who have to be thinking about that, because it's not going to take much for the Giants organization to open the door and blow out a whole bunch of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and those are the easy decisions because they had so many one-year contracts.
Exactly.
But then the bigger questions are, what do you do about a guy like Will Beatty? Is this a down season for him, or did they make a mistake giving him the big contract in the offseason? Those are the tougher decisions.
There are some tough ones.
Eli Manning, who's taking up a sixth of the salary cap with $20 million cap hit this year and next year. And obviously he's not going to take a pay cut, but do you restructure his contract and extend it? I mean, those are the types of decisions, those are the tough decisions that they're going to have to make in the offseason, because as you know, when you restructure, you're basically pushing the cap hit down the season again, and they've got to make decisions on guys that aren't performing this year. Are they in the future? I mean, what do they do with Hakeem Nicks? Do they make him a serious offer? I heard your comments on the NFL Network yesterday, and I thought you were spot on with that. But, you know, there's a decision that needs to be made with Hakeem Nicks in terms of how much do they even offer him in free agency. So it's those types of things. I think the easier ones are the ones that aren't performing, or the one-year contracts that they signed, and they're going to be UFAs, and you can just let those guys walk. But it's the ones that are under contract right now, that those are the tough decisions.
Fantastic. Eric, thank you so much. Eric Kennedy, check out his website, owner of Big Blue Interactive. Again, one of the best Giants fan sites out there. And congratulations, 20 years, Eric?
Yeah, it's coming up in 20 years next year.
Oh, good stuff.
Congratulations, that's great.
All right. Thank you.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. I'm curious, what was your what were your comments about Hakeem Nicks on the NFL Network? What did you say?
Well, I was asked if Hakeem Nicks is going to be back next year, and basically what I said is that the Giants went into this season wanting him back and hoping that things would work out, but because he's now had back-to-back injury-plagued seasons where his production has been dramatically affected, A, his market value is way down, and B, I just don't know even what the Giants think his market value is. And so you have a very interesting dynamic in that the player is not going to be able to go shopping as well as he thought he was, and he may actually turn around and tell the Giants, look, there's nothing really great out there. Could I come back? What kind of number are you talking about? But then again, the Giants aren't going to be giving him any kind of numbers near what they would have given him had he had a healthy season. So I think it's possible, but I don't really think it's going to happen. One way or the other, Hakeem Nicks is not going to get anywhere near the money he was hoping to get last July.
No, and just to kind of give you an idea of what number one wide receiver money is, it's look at Mike Wallace with the Miami Dolphins, $12 million a year he's making, and what has he done this season? He really hasn't. I mean, but let's look at the player he is and why they brought him in. They brought him in to stretch the field. So by having him there, it's really opened up things for for guys like tight end Charles Clay. It's really opened things up for Hartline. But teams go in and they play him, and so he really hasn't had like that outstanding of a season. But since he's such a long ball threat and Ryan Tannehill has such a strong arm, they have to respect it. It's really opened up things for the Miami Dolphins. Now, is that worth $12 million? Is having a long ball threat and opening up the middle of the field for your tight ends and your slot receivers and your possession receivers worth $12 million? Not that that's Hakeem Nicks's role. Hakeem's not I'm not comparing Mike Wallace to Hakeem Nicks. I'm just saying Mike Wallace, number one wide receiver, that's number one wide receiver money, $12 million a year.
It depends on how close you think your team is to winning. I really think that's a part of it, too. I think, Anita, based on what I know, the Giants were hoping to come in at around 9 or 10 maybe for Nicks if everything had gone well. I don't think they expected him to catch 100 balls for 1,200 yards and 15 touchdowns to where he was going to get top 5 or top 10 wide receiver money. I think their hope was that he was going to have a really terrific season and that they could work somewhere in the area of $9 million, maybe even $10 million, get creative with him, play on the fact that he wanted to play with Eli, play on the fact that he and Victor Cruz are a terrific combination. They were going to kind of hope that that could be part of the equation, plus the fact they were hoping that they'd be part of what is a winning, you know, situation here, and that Knicks would want to stay. And like, hey, Giants got a chance to win again. I want to be here. Well, none of these things happened the way they wanted them to. And so he's going to have to wind up taking less money no matter where he winds up.
Even though, yes, I know Hakeem Nicks has been struggling this season, but I think that there will be a number of scouts and a number of teams out there that will feel like, wow, this wasn't all his fault. A lot of this had to do with the fact that Eli had no time. A lot of this is the fact that Eli probably had arguably one of the worst seasons of his career. I think teams and scouts will give some consideration to the struggles that this offense had as a whole, as opposed to just pinpointing Hakeem Nicks and saying, son, you just don't have it anymore. So instead of paying you the $9 or $10 million, we're going to pay you $6 a year. I do believe that there are going to be teams out there that are going to take a shot at him. And I don't think, like we've seen Jerry do with Kevin Boss, like we saw Jerry do with wide receiver who went to the Philadelphia Eagles.
Steve Smith.
Teams that anteed up and put a lot of money on the table for some of these athletes and some of these players, and Jerry's like, we just can't match it. So as difficult as this is for me to say, because I adore Hakeem Nicks, he's one of my favorite Giants. He's just such a great, great, great human being. I'll be really sad to see him go, Paul. I think he's gone.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to end up that way, too. I will say this. The most interesting thing that I'll be watching about him during the offseason will be, where does he take his free agent visits, and how many does he take?
Carolina. And you got
for sure.
You got Steve Smith, who's already long in the tooth. You've got Brandon LaFell and Ted Ginn Jr. who are stepping up a notch. But you add a guy like Hakeem Nicks to that mix, could be interesting. Also, they have Greg Olsen, a very solid tight end. That would be, to me, I think that would be his number one landing place, and it's home. And look how Carolina's one of the hottest teams right now in the NFL.
I could see that, you know. But I think what's going to happen is, as you know, any team that brings him in, first thing they're going to do is they're going to go through the physical, and they're going to find out, okay, look, what is really going on with his legs? What is really going on with that abdominal? What are we talking about here? Is this guy truly broken? That's the first thing people got to figure out. And I think that's going to be an interesting thing for me, because if you wind up seeing him take 4 and 5 visits and he starts bouncing around to a couple of different places without signing, that's going to tell me that these teams have some reservations about his physical condition. Because I think Hakeem Nicks is the kind of guy, if you want him and you bring him in and he's okay, here, Hakeem, here's your deal. We want you. This is it. Come on now. Let's get this done. I don't think you let him off campus if you think he's healthy and you really want the guy.
Right. 201-939-4513 is the phone number for you to get in on the show. Paul Dottino, myself, Anita Marks, we're with you for the next 30 minutes talking all things Big Blue. Let's kick it off with Hugo in New Jersey. Hugo, welcome.
Good morning, guys.
Hi.
Hey, as you guys noted earlier, you know, I think the offense has been a colossal failure this year. And maybe one of the things the Giants should look at is the fact that maybe coaches, position coaches, aren't plug and play. And what I mean by that is maybe if Sean Ryan is a good wide receivers coach, he's not necessarily a good quarterbacks coach, and if Phil Bryant Jr. is a good quality control coach, maybe he's not necessarily a good wide receiver coach. Because I look at those two positions coming into the year, those were the positions that were supposed to have a lot of talent. So I think those positions were the ones that let us down through the course of the year. You know, looking back on it, having guys like Chris Palmer and Mike Sullivan and losing those guys may have had a bigger impact than we all originally thought. Second point I want to make is that, you know, obviously the other offensive coaches have a proven track record. And when you talk about Pat Flaherty and Mike Pope, you know, they're recognized league-wide, I think, as the very best in the business. So, to me, that's a real indictment on the talent. I mean, if Pat Flaherty and Mike Pope can't make something out of a player after 2 or 3 years, that just means that the players given to them are absolutely horrendous. Unsung hero of the offensive coaching staff, I think, is Gerald Ingram, with the revolving door at the running back. Again, a proven coach, and I think what he's done is nothing short of remarkable.
Well, you make some great points, and I'm not going to dispute them because, quite frankly, you look at what's happened with this team, and I think everybody's going to be held accountable top to bottom. I do believe Tom Coughlin stays, as I've said before, so he's not going to be subject to change. Other pieces may be, and that would include some of his staff members. And so I'm sure all of them are going to have to be on the hot seat. They're all going to have to answer questions. They're all going to have to talk about what they think about the future, what they think about some of these players. And what you say makes a lot of sense. There's going to be some heavy analysis of these guys. There's no doubt about it.
Well, Paul, I would love for Coach Coughlin to come back. There is one, and I know you said there's zero chance that he won't be back yesterday on the NFL Network, and I appreciate your comments there. The one thing that does concern me, and I listen very carefully to Coach Coughlin's press conferences, one time to the local media, he caught himself. He said, at my age, and then he caught himself. And then in the interview for the Sunday night game, he told Bob Costas that at my age, and he went further, he said, you know, these losses, and I'm paraphrasing, linger and just kill me.
Yep.
And I think there's a coach, I think it may have been Parcells, when he retired, he said, you know, one of the reasons why he retired is because the wins were no longer as satisfying and the losses were just lingered and killed them. And I get a sense that Coach Coughlin and Coach Parcells still talk every once in a while.
They do.
And that's one my concern. That's the elephant in the room. Coach Coughlin may not want to come back, especially when, you know, he's going to have to say goodbye to a lot of players that he had success with. And, you know, including his son-in-law, right? I mean, it's likely that Chris Knee won't be back, Dave Deal.
Right.
And I'm just concerned that with all that happening, plus the tragic
I would
defense,
not worry about that. You know why? Because
no?
Coach Coughlin
okay.
does not want to go out like this.
Well, that's
he does
thing
not.
I
trust me when
yeah.
I tell you. The six-game losing streak had him working 24-7, sleeping in the office, if he could even sleep. It was brutal on him. And he thought he could do something to turn around the team, to fix the team, to make sure they still had a chance. He will not, listen to me, he will not walk away on this team with a losing record like this. It will not happen. So don't worry about it.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Alan in Miami. Alan, welcome.
Hey, how are you guys?
Great.
Doing pretty good down here, 85 degrees. So
yeah, rub it in.
We'll be there in 15 minutes, okay?
Alan, where in Miami do you live?
I live in downtown Miami, right by the American Airlines Arena.
Okay.
I am not a Heat fan, born and raised in New York for 27 years.
Well, I
went to grad school, and I can't move back.
Born and raised in Miami, and I'm not a Heat fan. So that makes two
good.
Of us.
All right. I know you mentioned a couple of things I want to talk about with Knicks, and one of the things you said to me that really kind of struck me was that, you know, I really like him. He's a really nice guy. He's my favorite Giant, and it's just, you know, sometimes we have to make those moves, and it is a tough move. It's not a popular move with the fan base. Everybody loves Knicks. He has been great. But if you start looking at you know, what his production is, I mean, 4.5 receptions a game for 65 yards, I mean, that's not really that number one receiver kind of money that he's going to be looking for. And this is going to be coming up a very, very, very slim free agent class for wide receivers. And to me, if you're going to spend that much money on Hakeem Nicks, I would just open up the entire bank and go get an Eric Decker or somebody like that, that can be a true, quick, young receiver that can really help this team and complement Cruz. I mean, I love Nicks as well, but I can't see us committing long-term money to this guy. I just can't.
Well, I don't think Hakeem Nicks is going to get a long-term deal from anybody. Based on his injury history the last couple of years, he's probably only going to get a 2 or 3 year deal, and they'll probably.
When we see it.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Well, I just think
we just see it all the time in sports where there's that when the free agent class is so slim, you have to overpay for.
Well,
who else are you going to get?
Here's what you don't know, and Anita and I have gone through the free agent list as it stands today. And that's going to be totally different than as it stands March 1st or June 1st. You have to remember, there's going to be a ton of salary cap cuts. For example, okay, I'm going to throw his name out there because Bob Papa and I were talking about this the other day. He said, you know, Andre Johnson's going to be out of Houston. He's making something like $13 million in each of the next 2 years. Andre Johnson's probably going to get cut by the Texans. Okay? All of a sudden now, if he's on the list... he's going to draw a lot of interest. So there are going to be a lot of those kinds of guys who are probably going to be out there and added to the pool that you're seeing right now. So don't make any judgments or decisions based on the lists that exist today.
I just think that we've done a good job with letting that player go. I know Branch Rickey, I'm a big baseball guy, so Branch Rickey always said, I'd rather trade a player a year early than a year late. Or essentially
let a
guy go. So they let go of Steve Smith. We saw how that ended up. I mean, Steve Smith had 100-plus catches 2 years in a row, really helped us out, had some big third-down catches in that first Super Bowl. They let him walk, and he's never played again. Mario Manningham, they let him walk, and he's never really done anything. So I think the Giants do a pretty good job of kind of saying goodbye to that guy that everybody loves, that everybody's excited about, and then we get all up in arms right away, and then we kind of look a couple of weeks into the following season,
yeah,
and we look and say, wait, it's a great move.
They've been very good about guys who did not belong. There's no question about it. Barry Cofield's probably the best Giant who they allowed to walk.
One last point about this game coming up. You said, well, what's their motivation? What's going on? Can they get some, you know, looking forward to next year? I look back at 2004 when they made Eli the starter and they lost 8 games in a row. And I just remember that 2004 game against Dallas at the last minute. Dickie Barber banged in for a touchdown, and they win. Everybody's excited. Then they built that momentum going into the offseason and then had the 11-5 season the next year and then went on a run. And since
right.
that time, they've never had a losing season under Tom Coughlin.
So correct.
I get really angry sometimes when I hear Giant fans, you know, say that Coughlin's done. I mean, we have had one losing season with Tom Coughlin, one losing season, and 2 8-8s. And one of those 8-8s, we made the playoffs. So I don't think Tom Coughlin is the issue. He isn't the problem. And I think people love to just go and blame Tom Coughlin.
You know why? Because the head coach and the quarterback are always the magnets. And so we appreciate the phone call, but that's just the way it's going to be. No matter what team, no matter what league, no matter what sport, it's always going to be the head coach and then the, quote, star position that's going to catch the most heat when things go bad. And that's human nature. You know, you can't get mad at fans for feeling that way, but you can correct them and tell them, hey, in this case, that's not the problem. And so we move on.
As I said, I had Bryn Myers on as a guest for Big Blue Hits Live yesterday. If you missed that show, you can log on to Giants.com and watch it. I had him on for the first 2 segments, and he was excellent. He's not really the most talkative Giant in the locker room, but he was extremely talkative yesterday, and I thought he did a phenomenal job on the show. And I asked him, I said, you know, what's been the biggest change, the biggest difference in regard to your time in Oakland and then making your way here to New York? And this is something that we talk about each and every year, Paul, and that is the intricacies of Gilbride's offense and how difficult it is. And I thought he summed it up really well, where he said, you have to know what everybody's doing on the line of scrimmage, as opposed to when he was in Oakland, he would go to the line of scrimmage and he'd run his route. It's very different here. And then I asked him, I said, well, you know, obviously if Eli throws an interception, immediately everyone points at the quarterback, it's his fault. But more times than not, especially in this offense, would you say that 50% of it is because the receiver ran the wrong route? And he said, absolutely.
He was very honest.
Yes, and that's another thing that I know, because yesterday we fielded a ton of calls about the fact that Eli's done and the Giants need to look elsewhere, which I think is absolutely ridiculous. But again, it just goes to show you how intricate this offense is, how important it is that everyone's on the same page, and that there is a level of intelligence that needs to be had with certain athletes who come here for the Giants and play offense, because you have to read defenses, not just the quarterback. The quarterback is not the only individual responsible for reading defenses here with the Giants. And another thing we talked about, which I found really interesting, is I owned Brandon Myers last year in a few fantasy football leagues, and of course he rolled his eyes. He's not a fan of fantasy football, like Brandon Jacobs and a number of athletes are not. And I said, but I found that the majority of your touchdowns that you had in Oakland were more like out routes. And I said, you're more in the middle of the field. And he said, yes, that's the difference. That's the system here. And you and I, that probably one of the biggest knocks on Brandon Myers is his ability to. Well, go ahead. I'll let you.
Well, he doesn't have the wingspan or the athleticism to go up and make plays above the X's and the O's in between the hash marks.
Exactly.
And that's a very, very difficult thing to deal with when you've watched the 6'6" Martellus Bennett here, when you've watched the 6'5" Jake Ballard here, when you've watched the 6'5" Kevin Boss here. And now all of a sudden, you've got the guy who isn't that physically imposing, trying to make plays over the middle, and he just doesn't have that box. You know what I mean?
So there's two knocks on Brandon Myers, really, that he shared with us yesterday on the show, and that is, one, the system and his role in the system doesn't necessarily fit his athleticism and what he
or
can
lack
bring,
thereof.
And bring to the table for an offense. And on top of that, it takes a good year to really understand this offense and be able to execute it properly. So I think I asked you this yesterday. What's his deal with his contract? Do you feel Brandon Myers is here next year?
He's got a $4 million base, and it's voidable at the end of the season. And so there's a chance that he's back. There's a chance that he's not back. The Giants are going to have to sit down, look at their salary cap situation, see what kind of money they want to devote to the running backs, the wide receivers, the offensive line. And then they'll figure out, well, do we really want to commit $4 million again to the tight end spot? That's going to be a very big question. And they're also going to have to figure out, Anita, quite frankly, does Brandon Myers give them enough reason to believe he will be better for them in year two? Does he need that full year of experience in the system? Or is it a hopeless cause? Like we said, does he just not fit this system well enough that $4 million is way too much money to pay?
201-939-4513, packed house, a ton of calls. We're with you till 10:30, so we just want to try to roll through them as quickly as possible. Let's go to Seattle. Wow, all the way on the left coast, Steve. Steve,
hey, how you guys doing?
Your team is coming. Your team is coming to the Big Apple.
Oh no! I bleed blue.
Oh wow! So you bleed blue. You're in Seattle. What a week! I'm sure this has been for you.
You have no idea the mess that I'm getting from work right now. matter of fact, my boss has, every week, my boss tells me, when are you going to take your lanyard off? And I tell him never. I say never. It's not going to happen. Well, we were 0-6. I can't explain the honor I was getting of being such a loyal fan. And I'm like, well, I mean, hey, I loved it when we won the last two Super Bowls. I know we have four total, but you know I'm gonna have to take my medicine and eat it now when we're 0-6. I've been a big Giants fan since Phil Simms. I think Phil Simms is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. That's just my opinion. But that being said, I heard what you guys were talking about Nick, and I don't want to see him go, but I think we need to address a lot of other needs. Speaking of the last two Super Bowls, one of the key elements, I mean, yeah, we had some good offensive, Eli was okay throwing the ball, but I think we need to worry about the defense. I mean, we have a lot of defensive needs that need to be addressed. I mean, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Defensive needs? Now, I will tell you, I like the secondary. Okay, I think that Beeson and Jaquan Williams are good places to start at linebacker, but they could use another one there for sure. and they may or may not wind up needing at least one more pass rusher. But defensive tackle is good. So I don't know that they've got a lot of needs on defense. To me, they need more help on offense.
Yeah.
The offensive line needs two guys. The running backs are going to need fortification.
Well,
the wide receivers are going to need fortification. They may need a tight end. There's a lot more. No, Anita, you're with
me? I don't think people realize that you know, this Giants defense, actually, believe it or not, they're very good. The problem with the Giants defense is that when the offense isn't being productive, they're spending way too much time on the field. Time of possession is won by the opponent. And with all the interceptions and all the turnovers, you're putting the defense in a bad situation with their backs to the wall, where now you're giving an opponent a short field to score a touchdown. So I think the scoreboard and the fact that the Giants have a losing season, I'm not putting this on the defense. I think if this
I hear what you're saying, but I mean, case in point. Okay, the second game that we played against the Dallas Cowboys at home. In New York, they started, what was it, on the 20-yard line, and they drove down the field. Now, the defensive end, when JP's healthy, he's a beast. When Tuck is healthy, he's a beast. But the middle, I mean, the inside interior rush, I mean, there's, I don't see it when I'm watching the game.
Oh, no, hold on. The Giants' defense is not designed to get pass rush from the defensive tackles. Those guys are meant to stay home and stop the run. They spent the entire offseason preaching to these guys how we got to stop the run better, and we're going to not only bring in guys who are going to do it, but once they get here, everybody else is going to concentrate on it too. And they have. So, no, I think you're misguided. If you're looking for pass rush out of those DTs, that's not what they want from those fellas.
So they just want them to sit back and stop the run.
They want those guys to clog it. That's it.
I'm just looking for more sacks. I mean, it's
To be fair, honestly, Steve, if JPP and Tuck and Kiwanuka had combined for the 35 or so sacks that they were expected to get this year, you wouldn't have been asking for more sacks. That would have been enough, and this would not have been an issue for you. But because those three guys aren't anywhere near where they were supposed to be, you're looking around saying, well, why aren't our defensive tackles getting some sacks too? You see, you're creating your own problem or your own void because those guys didn't produce.
Right. And, I mean, on the offensive side of the ball, I get the fact that the revolving door of the running backs has been an issue. Now, I do have a question for you guys. Do you think Ahmad might have had one more big year left with us?
No, Bradshaw wound up having neck surgery. I was talking to Brandon Jacobs about him the other day because he and Ahmad still talk. They're like brothers. And he said he's doing okay. He's coming along fine. You don't expect him to play anymore. Okay, that's it. I mean, he had one good game. It's you know, isn't this kind of odd, Anita, that both Jacobs and Bradshaw this year had one good game kind of in what may be both of their swan songs? You know, they both were able to come back for another season.
Mm-hmm.
Jacobs with the Giants, Bradshaw with the Colts. And Bradshaw had that one really good game at the beginning of the year for Indianapolis, just like Brandon had the 100-yard game against Chicago. And that may be the last hurrah for both of them. It's certainly possible. And likely for Bradshaw. Not quite as likely for Jacobs, but I do think in all likelihood, yeah. So, anyway.
And also, your thoughts on Hillis. I think we should keep him around for another year.
I'd bring him to camp. Depending upon who else they bring in, he'll compete. I think he deserves the chance to compete. And if he wins a job, fine. I'd bring him back to camp. But I wouldn't, guarantee him a spot.
Right.
Thanks for the call.
Right.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Appreciate it. Let's go to Mike in Albany. Mike, welcome.
Hey.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask Anita a couple fantasy questions, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead. Shoot.
So I'm in the playoffs. I had my first week off. I had Nochon Marino was my big waiver wire of the year. So
good for you.
So that kind of led me. But I have a dilemma right now. I had Ray Rice, and obviously he hasn't really panned out. I play in a 1-point PPR league.
Right.
So I'm one, and my backup is Ryan Matthews, who's actually come on pretty well lately. So who would you trust more in this situation, Ray Rice against Detroit, or Ryan Matthews against Denver, which Denver is giving up a lot of points to, especially PPR back?
Ryan Matthews, hand down. Ray Rice, get this. The Detroit Lions, they're only giving up an average of 11 fantasy football points to opposing running backs at home. So Ray Rice isn't even a flex play for me this week. I would not start him. And you gotta like the way that that the San Diego Chargers are committing to Ryan Matthews. I want to say he got 20 to 25 carries against the Giants, where Danny Woodhead only got 6. So you gotta like that. And they're gonna have to run the ball in Denver later on tonight, because they wanna control the time of possession. They wanna keep the ball away from Peyton Manning. You gotta love Ryan Matthews tonight.
Okay, so I'm going to start both No-Shot and Ryan Matthews tonight. My other question is, I normally have 3 stud wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
I have Andre Johnson, Eric Decker, who's put monster points,
mm-hmm.
and Victor Cruz. Now, I am terrified of the matchup with the Giants passing. And the only other guy that has a favorable matchup that I could see benching Cruz for, and I would hate to do it because I hate the Eagles, but I have Riley Cooper.
Oh, come on, that's a no-brainer.
In Minnesota.
That's a no-brainer. You got to go with Riley Cooper.
Okay, even with the PPR.
Nick, I love Nick Foles, and I love Riley Cooper. I think they're going to destroy the Minnesota Vikings. Also, Adrian Peterson's not going to play. What does that mean? They're going to be in third and long situations a lot. They're not going to be able to convert. They're going to have to punt. I think Nick Foles is a phenomenal play. Get this, the Minnesota Vikings, are they giving up the most fantasy football points to opposing quarterbacks at home in Minnesota? Which means, obviously, he's throwing touchdowns, and Riley Cooper is his guy. So I would hands down play Riley Cooper over Victor Cruz this week.
Okay, well, I appreciate it, guys, and take care.
You
have
got it. Good luck. Good luck in week 15. Let's go to Steve in Connecticut. Steve, welcome.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Quick question about the quarterback situation. We got Ryan Nassib in the fourth round, and, you know, I know the plans was probably hoping that he had a good preseason, that maybe we could probably get a good draft pick for him, but that never happened. So what do we do, like, to address the quarterback situation? Because Eli took a beating this year, like, and I don't see, like, a quality backup quarterback on the roster.
Well, we don't know what Ryan Nassib is, you know. Honestly, we don't. I know Curtis Painter is not very good. That I can tell you. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you go with 2 quarterbacks next year. You can't afford to burn a 3rd roster spot on a quarterback next season. This team's not good enough to do that. And so Ryan Nassib either is going to show the Giants something during the offseason that he's worthy of being the number 2, or by the end of next preseason, he'll get cut, and the Giants will be forced to sign a veteran off the street. It's that simple.
So you think would there be a chance that we go for a quarterback this year in the draft?
No.
That's out of the question.
No. I don't think they'll draft a quarterback, no.
And what about as far as special teams go, punt or kick returner? Do we have any shot at Josh Cribbs at any point this season, or?
Well, Cribbs was out there, and the Giants were supposedly interested, but it never happened. I don't know what his contract status is right now, so I'm just going to leave that one alone, but the way the Giants' return game is right now, Anita's got a better job of running one back in her high heels.
Oh, man. And one more question. Stevie Brown, you know, he's coming off this knee injury or what have you. What do you think his chances are coming back?
Well, the knee's progressing well, and the Giants, are, in all likelihood, are going to ask him to come back. He'll probably have to take a 1-year deal. I think he knows that. He realizes that, you know, he's a medical risk at the moment, and so he'll take that 1-year deal to prove that he can play again. It'll be at a moderate price, and then he'll look to cash in at the end of next season. But I do think he'll be back. I think they want him back. I know he wants to be back, and you'll see that 3 safety look with Roll, Hill, and Stevie Brown. And I know the Giants coaches think that that could be a very big turnover machine with those 3 guys.
All right, Paul. All right, thanks, man.
All right, thanks for calling.
All right, let's continue with Big Ed in Maryland. Big Ed, welcome.
Hello, hello, hello.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty good, man. How are you?
I'm great, great, great. Coming up, this will be my first game. I will be there.
Enjoy.
Sunday. I do feel like we are going to beat Seattle, and I don't want anybody thinking that I'm crazy to think that. Let's get back to that. Let's get to that. Everybody else been talking about other stuff. Seattle, we can beat them.
How?
Penetration. As long as we do if I put it to you this way, if we do what we did to AP to Marshawn Lynch, we'll beat Seattle.
Anita, would you like to chime in on how Russell Wilson's better than Josh Freeman? Would you like to just for the heck of it?
He can be touched. He can be touched, Paul. He can be touched. Come on. He can be touched.
Russell Wilson's the fourth leading rushing quarterback in the league this year. So even if you get some pressure on him, he can get away. He also knows what he's doing, okay? He's got a pretty good grasp on that offense. This is a monumental task, okay? Let me just say something to you right now. I believe this would be by far the Giants' biggest coup if they could pull off this upset on Sunday, because I don't see very many ways that they can do it. I really don't.
Big Paulie, I'm going to be real quick because you guys got probably got maybe one or two calls left. Look, tell the guys, man, this is the game of the season. This is the proof that they know that. Beat the Seahawks in your own home. Don't care about their record. If we can beat them in their home, we definitely can beat them in ours. Simple as that. See you guys on Sunday.
All right, Big Ed. Thank you so much.
Monumental.
Have a good time, Big Ed. Have a good time.
Hey, we thank everybody for tuning in today. Really do appreciate it. Paul, thoughts, final thoughts before we do sign off?
Well, you know, Anita, I'm very interested to see if Prince Amukamara is back at practice today. He was ill yesterday, was not in shells, was out there, but was unable to do a whole lot. That would certainly be a big factor for the Giants if they're to have any semblance of hope against the Seahawks passing game. And then, obviously, Colin Jenkins, who had a sore leg yesterday and did not practice, who's had a very strong season. You know, when you talk about some of the free agents that the Giants have picked up over the last few years, Colin Jenkins is a good pickup. He's a good player. Good against the run. Gets a decent push on the pocket as well. And a good leader. I like Colin Jenkins a lot, and I'm glad the Giants got him. But he was unavailable to practice yesterday again because of a leg injury. So you're going to have to see if he's going to be available as well. If not, that means Jonathan Hankins, the rookie out of Ohio State, would obviously see a lot more snaps on Sunday. And boy, what an experience that would be for him going against the likes of Marshawn Lynch.
Good stuff. We appreciate everybody's participation in the show. Thank you very much, Eric Kennedy, owner of Big Blue Interactive. Always fun having him on the show on Thursdays. Have a great night, everybody, or have a great day, I should say. Make sure you tune in to Giants.com. Again, 4 p.m. Eastern time, Big Blue hits live. Paul Dottino, Roman Oben, and myself. You can watch that live on the internet and also call in. Same phone number, 201-939-4513, and stay tuned to Giants.com a little bit later on this afternoon as the players that we do talk to, those interviews will be posted a little bit later on this evening. Anything else, Paul?
Have a great day.